Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Larry Miller. And joining me by phone from his restaurant Il Mito in Wauwatosa is Chef Michael Fecker. He is the owner and executive chef of Il Mito Enoteca, and he studied at the California Culinary Academy, but has called Wisconsin home since 1997, and we're certainly glad to have him here in the state. Chef Michael Fecker, thank you for joining us. It's so good to have you with us. And we're glad to have you here, Chef Fecker. First of all, why Il Mito for the name of your restaurant?
Food, great atmosphere, and great service, cars, and arm and leg is a myth that I've been trying to destroy for many years. And I believe that if you share your passion, you really don't need to charge extra for your passion.
So Il Mito is the myth that you're busting with your restaurant.
That's correct. That's correct.
And so you have had a love of food from an early age, but you were really supposed to become a doctor, according to your family. What really drew you to the kitchen in the first place?
I think, you know, the way I was brought up, we always shared love through food, and we still do in every way. But it got to a point that I was not very happy at school and becoming a dentist. So I decided to look at different opportunities to find and fill this hole in my soul that I could not do by going to school. So I went to California Culinary Academy for lunch, Judith, one day. And I fell in love with the atmosphere, with the energy, with the creation, and with that instant gratification that you get when a patron or a fecarudi, as they call them, as I call them, you know, lick that plate and they go, wow, chef, that is great. You know, it's that instant gratification that got me to start cooking and loving it. And I've never looked back ever since.
Well, and I think it's interesting that you said that you started with a love of food because it was something that you share, you know, with people that you care about and that you love, often in a family setting. And you have been sponsoring a family recipe contest for your customers and people who know of you, the restaurant, and your culinary school. Why is it important to go back to our culinary roots? I think, like a lot of things, you know, things go through different fashions and fads, and food is definitely one of those things. But why do we feel the need to go back to those culinary roots?
You know, it is crucial to remember what touches our culinary souls and what flavors warm our hearts. And that is usually our childhood family recipes. You know, I want to get people back to the kitchen and cooking again. When they smell those culinary aromas, and I'm sure you remember when you were a child and you would come home and you would smell certain aromas, you would know, hey, mom is making this. Mm-hmm. And that would just bring you back to the table. And that is my cause, to get you back to the table. Whether mine or yours, that's irrelevant. As long as we cook and we put good, healthy calories in our body, that's all I care about. So as all my fecarudis submit their favorite recipes to the site that is www Family Recipe Revival, I revive it. And I adapt it to our healthy, light, and flavorful living approach. And also, we love eating healthy these days, and that is a cause that I'm fighting for tremendously. So I like to show take the recipe and show them that if that recipe has so much fat in it, so much butter mm-hmm. in it, and so much on and on and on, we can readapt it and make it still heartwarming and soul-feeding, even though if it's adapted to a nice, healthy approach.
And I have to say, when you talked about, you know, that smell that you would walk into your mom's kitchen and smell, for me, one of the most vivid food memories I have is my mother was of an Italian background, and she would make an anchovy soup. And a lot of people, when I would say that, they'd say, ew, anchovy soup. But to me, the combination of the salty anchovies and the tomato broth and knowing that there were the little digitale pasta floating in it, for me, that was being home, was the anchovy soup.
That is a Sicilian specialty, as a matter of fact. I don't know if that's where your
I think she was from farther north, but yeah, it's a delicious dish.
Yeah, it is, and it is a lovely mixture and contrast of flavors, which truly complements each other. Well, I would love to have a bowl right now. I wish you could send me one.
That's the risk of doing a lunchtime show, too. We often get hungry talking about great food.
Exactly. And that is all the cause we are fighting for, you know, to get hungry for great flavors and to cook and have that ownership of what we create. That is the most important thing. Whether you go to a small mom and pop that they cook healthy and happy, because truly, Judith, what is so crucial is if you taste the food and it really feeds your soul and you feel good about it, you know, that is some happiness of some creator that we call a chef that has cooked it, and that happiness is being transferred to you. When there's tension in the kitchen, you feel it. Mm-hmm. When there's love in the kitchen, you feel it. When there's happiness in the kitchen, you feel it, and you feel it all through that bites that you take. And that is very crucial that we remember that when we're cooking.
And for me, I love to cook. And often, you know, when I know that someone's, you know, going through a hard time or just stressed and overworked or something, my first response is to want to cook for them. And I feel like not only am I feeding them, but just the act of cooking for someone can really be a meditation on why you care about that person, too.
You're absolutely correct, because now we go back to that same thing that we discussed. You share your love through food. And that is exactly what I do. My love for life, for my wife, for my children is manifested through food. And that's how I do it. This is a vehicle that I use to show you how much I love life, because it is a blessing that a lot of times we take for granted, you know. And you think about it. We sometimes look at ourselves like a car, and we go into gas station, we just pump gas, and we leave. And that is the kind of dining that we do not need to have, and we should not have, because if we look at dining as an experience and not as a ritual, we have won half of the battle.
And I want to make sure that our listeners are able to join in this conversation with Chef Michael Fecker of Il Mito Restaurant in Wauwatosa, Wisconsin. He is with us until about 11:45. We'd love to hear what your favorite family recipes are, what brings back that sense of place and home for you. You can call us at 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post a comment on our Facebook page. And I hope that you'll join in. I'm sure Chef Fecker would like to hear about some of your family favorites. I want to go back to something that you said, Chef, talking about, you know, if you feed yourself, feeding your soul is as important as feeding your body. And if basically, if you feed yourself junk, it's not going to be satisfying. And I think, especially in the U.S., we have this very love-hate relationship with food. We succumb to lots of guilty feelings, and we tend to eat in excess or not eat in excess. And I think that's something that's not totally unique to the U.S., but I think other cultures, especially maybe European cultures, have a little more balanced sense of their relationship to food. What can we as home cooks, or you as a restaurant chef, do to make those foods healthier so that they're more satisfying, they're healthier, and so we are feeding ourselves in that holistic way?
A great question, and something that I'm passionate about. Thank you for asking that. That's such an important question. You know, Judith, it is time for us to remember that empty calories are bad for us. Good calories are consumed by the body. And in my opinion, obesity, unlike a lot of other people, obesity is not consumption of too much food. It's consumption of foods that are filled with preservatives and things that the body cannot absorb and digest, and it reserves it. Furthermore, just going back to that car analogy, you know, you go to the gas station, you fill up the tank with the gas, and if you don't move that car, that gas tank is never going to get empty. The way the body works is takes in food, turns it into fat, and reserves it as reserve. If we don't burn it, it's never going to go away. So all I think my great foodies, I beg them to do is, first of all, remember and question and demand to know what is in your food. Do not just eat something because it is placed in front of you or time crunch is pushing you to do so. Take pride, because if we do not, I hope everybody remembers this, if we do not make time for eating healthy, we have to make time for being sick. There is no other option. It doesn't work any other way. So it is crucial that we remember, for example, good calories, that means calories that have the highest BV or biological value, such as eggs, such as good protein, such as good oils, such as grains, on and on, is what I want you to eat. But if we go to a place that doesn't work like that, you don't have a choice. You have to eat what they put in front of you. So I ask you to start getting back to the table and back to the kitchen and cook. And I know many of our listeners right now mm-hmm. love to cook. They're just the time crunch that has made us into a GPS mode driven people. We don't have time. We don't have time. We always have time to go in line, wait in a restaurant for 45 minutes or an hour, get some junk and come out and mm-hmm. eat with guilt.
And I think actually Wolf, who's on the phone from Seymour, has something that he'd like to add to the conversation that follows nicely to that. Hi, Wolf.
Well, actually, two things. Now that you mentioned the part about being passionate about food, I just graduated from culinary school.
Great.
Well, that's great.
And it took me 12 years to finally decide to do that, of working in the industry.
Well, my friend, I think you and I have something in common. It took me many years to define my passion and for food and try to start manifesting it through cooking. Now that you have finished culinary school, what I beg you to do is make sure you pay your dues by working with someone else and learning from their do's and don'ts. Remember, Miles Davis said you got to learn how to play like someone else before you can play like yourself. So don't think that you want to go out there and capture the world. That time will come. Start learning how others are trying to capture the world through the culinary arts, and then go out there and make it yours. That's what I ask you to do.
All right. Well, I think I could do that. But what I was going to say is that my passion for food came through onto my family. I've never been a dinner table person. My whole family would never sit at a dinner table, never did. But what we did instead is we get to work in the kitchen. All of us, the entire family. You know, I put my daughter in charge of peeling carrots or whatever, or doing small chopping, and my wife helps me get my mise en place together, and we all put it together, and the whole time we're talking about our day and everything like that.
That is beautiful.
And then we go sit down. And then we go sit down and you know, eat in front of the TV so we can enjoy our meal quietly.
My hat's off to you. And one of the reasons that my hat is off to you is because you have broken the cycle. You know, just because going through your own family and childhood, you were not sitting at the table that often, you've done exactly the opposite. You know, studies shows when you sit at the table with family members, with children, they have much less of chance of getting into drugs, into bad behavior, in obesity, on and on and on. And we are their guide. Us parents are their guide. And you are being a phenomenal guide. And I'm I haven't even met you in person, but I can't wait to meet you one day.
Well, thank you so much for joining the conversation. And you can join, too, by calling 1-800-642-1234. Rachel Owens is our on-air producer today, waiting anxiously to take your call. And you can also email us at talk@wpr.org. Chef Fecker, this is such a wonderful time of year for fresh herbs. I find myself going out a few times a day, checking my herbs and you know, waiting for them. I don't want to start using them before they're big enough, but it's so tempting because the smells and the textures are so wonderful. What fresh herbs do you like to use the most, and how do you think it's best to incorporate them?
Oh boy, Judith, I tell you, I am the wrong person to ask that because I love all herbs.
Well, you're the right person to ask that.
Maybe I am the right person. You know, I love all herbs. You know, if you have a chance, or our listeners have a chance to read my blog on herbs, you know, I do various blogs on different things, but herbs is one of those things that I write about all the time. You know, you have medicinal usage for them, and you have culinary uses for certain ingredients. Herbs are one of those that have both uses simultaneously, so that is very crucial to remember. And I also use herbs to enhance flavors, and to also choose herbs is a difficulty that a lot of people have, but try to use an herb that complements that cultural creations that you're making. For example, Latino, they use a lot of cilantro.
Mm-hmm.
Mediterranean, a lot of rosemary, oregano, and basil. You know, you get into French, you have those plus some thyme, marjoram, and lavender. You
and
know.
Tarragon.
Oh, tarragon is coming next. You know, I love tarragon mm-hmm. with seafood and dill, you know, on and on and on. So another thing that for all of our listeners that are listening, heart situations and issues, the sodium can be replaced with a lot of great herbs and spices. Such as, when I call about spices, again, not salt and pepper, but something such as turmeric,
mm-hmm.
curry powder, you know, paprika, things like that that can bring out those beautiful flavors and get your palate searching for more flavors without having that sodium added to it. So I use spices and herbs to enhance flavors and also to replace certain ingredients that I want to take out.
Mm-hmm. And actually, not an herb or a spice, but also something that can kind of fool you into thinking and not noticing that you've taken a lot of sodium out is just a splash of citrus in something, too.
Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful input. Because citrus just perks those palates,
right,
and says, okay, wake up now, taste it. And you start searching for other flavors. And that is absolutely true. You know, ginger is an amazing, amazing ingredient. Rosemary and the cancer-fighting rosemary and turmeric, on and on and on. So it's beautiful. And again, if you read that blog on michaelfecker.com, you will see what I'm talking about, because there's so much to talk about when it comes to herbs.
And Fecker is F-E-K-E-R, just so people can find that. Chef Michael Fecker is our guest today. He's the owner and executive chef of Il Mito Enoteca in Wauwatosa. And he will be with us until about 11:45. We hope you'll join in by calling 1-800-642-1234. I'm Judith Sears Poisson, sitting in today for Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, I'm Judith Sears Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Chef Michael Fecker of Il Mito Enoteca in Wauwatosa is our guest. He would be happy to talk with you about your favorite family recipes and about his unique style of cooking, Mediterranean cooking with a twist. And we're very happy to have him with us today. Chef Fecker, we have Catherine in Richland Center who'd like to join the conversation, so let's go to her. Hi, Catherine.
Hi, Catherine.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I wanted to get the chef's thoughts and ideas. I'm a small organic vegetable producer, and, you know, I see firsthand all the time the true cost of cheap food and how we can bring more consumers to understand you know, that cheap food has costs associated with it. You know, without sounding preachy or making people feel guilty, because in a tough economy, people are trying to stretch dollars. But, you know, and like the relative difference between a 99-cent dozen of eggs and a $5 dozen of eggs. But, you know, you can also get a really great meal out of a dozen eggs for $5. So I just wanted to know if that's something you've ever had a chance to talk to people about and how you communicate that.
Well, that's a great question, because I try to use organic and local ingredients as much as possible in my restaurant. And one of the issues, of course, that we have are the seasons. But going back to your question, I think we need to start an educational program on a regular basis for people. And by program, I mean that people need to start looking into the facts that come with eggs that are organic, free-range eggs, in comparison to regular eggs. One-third less cholesterol, one-third less saturated fat, one-fourth more great biological value for eggs, and on and on and on. And then you do not have all those hormones or all the junk that goes in mass production, the mass-produced eggs.
I think that's a great point, and it is really easy to get kind of hung up on, oh, this dozen eggs is five times more expensive, but like Kathy said, you know, it's still only $5 for a meal for maybe four people.
Yes, and the flavor, Judith, the flavor, it is so much different that one egg works as much and satisfy you as much as maybe three eggs of a regular
mm-hmm.
egg. But
right.
I mean, it's not so much quantity here. It's the quality that one great organic free-range egg gives you. So it is important to also understand people like you that grows organic, how much work goes into what you create. And is basically what you pay is what you get in life. Isn't it always the case?
Right.
And also, look at now, but one thing that I wanted to let you know is people and companies, enormous companies such as Walmart, okay, have decided that they want to jump on this organic wagon and understand that this is what the consumers are going to demand. So to all of our listeners, it is all about supply and demand on a regular basis in business. In this case, it's got to be demand and supply.
Hmm.
If we as consumers demand organic, free-range, healthy ingredients, those prices in time will come down, because all the producers are going to focus on creating proper ingredients the proper way.
That's a great point. And Chef Fecker, I want to go back to something that you just kind of mentioned in passing, that, you know, one really good egg can be more satisfying than three eggs that really don't have much flavor. I think that one of the things that has gotten really out of whack, especially in the United States, is portions and what a portion is and what a dinner plate should look like and how much, you know, that unfortunately what you said, you get what you pay for. You know, people have turned that into I want the most bang for my buck. And so really the portions that we've come to think of as normal really should be probably two or even three portions. And one of the things when I had the opportunity to eat at Il Mito was not only that your food was delicious, but it was a portion that was not overwhelming. And I was truly satisfied, but it wasn't too much and it certainly wasn't too little. How do we start retraining ourselves to look at a plate and think that's a perfect portion?
I think the bigger, you know, it takes the brain 20 minutes to know whether the stomach is full or not. That's why I don't want to give an eating, explanation or a lesson here, but I want everybody to understand that if we do not go to portion control, and we do not, I don't want to listen and make it sound also a portion control, but like you said, just remember, a good quality ingredient cooked correctly can be as satisfying as junk put in front of you, but in a huge mound. That's why when you start cooking things for yourself, you start analyzing portions which by yourself, and you will understand what is the correct amount of ingredients that you need to use to justify how you feel. Another issue, Judith, that we are having is the reason that we eat so much is because we have these large meals maybe once or twice a day. And one thing that they try to teach us is the people that know about eating, do not sit at the table when you're hungry. That's why the diets that I do for my patrons, and I work with the people like Gunnar Peterson, who is the trainer to the stars, and on and on and on. But the diets that I do is about six the small little pieces of ingredients that you need to eat, or six meals, six times a day. Now, I promise you, many of our listeners are right now saying, but I don't have the time to do this. You absolutely do. I'll challenge any of you to eat right and see how well you're going to feel. Then you will never go back. Because if you wake up in the morning and you start with a little bit of oatmeal with good flavors in it, some raisins, some dry fruits, to give you that fuel that you need to get going, then go to a small breast of chicken at 10 o'clock that you have already cooked from the night before, in a Ziploc or in a closed bag with you at work. Take a little bite of that chicken. Then at 12 o'clock, you have that remaining chicken with some salad. That's already three meals. At 2 o'clock, you gotta eat something, a piece of fruit. At 4 o'clock, just before dinner, you put something in your stomach so you don't sit at the dinner table and go, oh God, I wanna just eat everything that's in front of me. So you gotta pace yourself and eat a little bit the entire day instead of just sitting down and eating too much at once. And also it's my job and other restaurateurs and chefs' job to understand that we don't give too little, because that is not the way a lot of people appreciate. At the same time, we don't give too much. We just give enough.
Well, and also I think the presentation makes such a difference too. If it's a reasonable sized portion on a lovely plate with maybe some, you know, fresh herbs chopped over it, something like that, if it feels special, then you feel more satisfied too.
And the love that goes into it has everything to do with it, because once you take that first bite, and the presentation, like you said, is very crucial, because we eat with our eyes first. But once you take that first bite, and the backbone of everything that I do as a chef is flavors, and then surrounded with all the other things such as presentation, portion, moisture, texture, and everything else. But if the flavor is not there, everything is down the drain. You know, you got to take that bite and go, wow, that is nice.
Mm-hmm.
That
is really nice. Savor it.
Yeah, that is soul feeding.
Michael in Decorah, Iowa has something I think he'd like to add to the conversation. Hi, Michael.
Hi, I'm calling about the portions of the plate. I know a lot of dietitians I talk to have been saying, instead of using the food pyramid, which is starting to confuse people, use the 9-inch plate example, which is a 9-inch small plate with half of it vegetables, a quarter starch, and a quarter protein, instead of trying to incorporate everything in there and that restaurants should go to smaller plates, as you guys were saying, to incorporate smaller portions.
Good point. You know, as far as half vegetable, half protein, and half what was the other quarter that you mentioned? I'm sorry, the other quarter that you mentioned?
Half vegetable, a quarter protein, and a quarter starch.
Correct. Okay. The vegetable and the starch, remember, they're both going to turn into sugar, and that sugar is what your body needs to fuel. The protein is going to be used to be reserved if you're combining these two together. So I am certainly not an advocate of only protein diet. Just remember what is the cause that you're fighting for at that moment when you're dining. Do you want to burn fat for a certain amount of time, or do you want to give yourself a boost of energy? If you want to burn fat, lower the bit on the vegetables. Make sure that the grains that you're, I mean, the starch that you're using is complex carbohydrates, okay, such as beans and legumes, and make sure that the protein is a little bit larger than just a quarter plate, because that protein is going to go and be reserved. But if you mix it with too much sugar, the blood is going to get this boost of sugar, is going to start burning sugar as energy and reserve the protein as fat. And that's why you think, how come I'm never losing weight? I'm just eating a little bit. It's because of these combination of things. That's why you need to think about those things. But your analogy is absolutely correct. You know, keep it simple and use what you use on a daily basis, which is a plate. So the restaurants that do that, look, the majority of restaurants, Judith, when I believe you were here, you saw the plate, is an 11.5-inch plate. Mm. But that's including the rims. The internal rim and the space of the plate is usually 9 inches.
Great. Thanks for that call, Michael. That was a really helpful addition. And I think that they are actually right now in the process of rolling out. They're kind of doing away with the food pyramid, and it's more of a plate image now.
Correct. That is true, because also the food pyramid was created many years ago. We need to adapt.
We need
to adapt, and we need to understand what the human body does, what does it need, and how are we going to do this for different people, because our needs are different.
And speaking of different needs, you do a lot of gluten-free cooking at Il Mito. And for those of us with family and friends that can't tolerate gluten, what do you recommend for satisfying everyone at the table? When, you know, you don't want to make someone feel kind of like the outcast, like, oh, here's your dinner, we're all going to be eating this.
No, you're absolutely correct. But first of all, for my gluten-free fecarudis, be proud, because you have made me do things that I probably wouldn't have done, because I bake my own bread here. I do my own pizza dough for gluten-free. I do the pastas. I love this gluten-free approach, because in many of us, if you want to shock the body and get the body to do what you want to do for you, it's amazing what a gluten-free diet can do for you, just for a little bit of time. But going back to your question, I do gluten-free menu here because I want everybody who walks into Il Mito feel like a star, and they can eat whatever they want. So I teach gluten-free at my cooking classes at Il Mito. I also want you to know about gluten-free. Gluten-free is not just a trend. Gluten-free is truly a disease. And for those that understand gluten-free, need to train their people in the kitchen how to cook gluten-free. You can't just put a gluten-free menu and not know about cross-contamination, the proper way of cooking ingredients, not cooking the pasta in the same regular pasta water, having a different pasta water for it, making sure that a portion of the pizza oven is dedicated to gluten-free pizza so there is no cross-contamination, making sure that when you're doing a gluten-free dessert, you don't use it on a plate, a table that flour was put on it, on and on and on. But gluten-free diet is crucial, because there's a huge majority of us now that are being diagnosed with gluten intolerance. And here at Il Mito, we don't make them an outcast. They are a part of the Il Mito family. When they sit down and they ask for the gluten-free menu, which is brought to them anyway, they order off of that. Automatically, the bread goes in the oven. Their olive oil and garlic dip comes to the table with that bread, so they don't do cross-contamination of the other guys dipping their olive oil and bread, and they feel like, what am I going to do? And from there on, they are actually the star. They're put on the pedestal because they deserve to be.
Well, and I think that if an Italian restaurant can do gluten-free, anyone can, really, because when you think about it, Italian cooking is so wheat-based, it seems, with all the pastas and the flours and things like that. So if you're able to do that, it really shouldn't be quite as intimidating to other people.
No, I absolutely not. Absolutely not. And you got to remember, a lot of people may not want to do it, or they feed you, they make you feel uncomfortable when you even mention it, mm-hmm. because they do not have the ability to systemize and implement and analyze the need of the customer. That is one of the main reasons. You know, you do not want to throw, they feel it's a wrench in the system. Absolutely not. It's an enhancement and growth of the system.
We have Kathy in Green Bay who'd like to join in. So let's go to her. Hi, Kathy.
Welcome, hey. Kathy.
Hi, my son is 11, and he has, for the past 3 years, expressed how much he wants to be a chef. Now, I consider myself a foodie, and so I encourage this with him, and we've even made bacon chocolate chip cookies. I'm trying to encourage this, but what more can I be doing with him?
And how old is he, Kathy?
I'm sorry?
How old is he?
11.
Okay. What do you think, Chef Ecker?
Kathy, you're cutting out. Are you talking about your son or
daughter? She has an 11-year-old son who's shown interest in cooking, and she's been starting him on baking and things like that, but she wants to know what more she can do to encourage that interest in him.
I think what you're doing is perfect, but like all other habits with children, we need to give him responsibility, and as you're cooking with him, start giving him specific tasks that he's responsible for and making sure that when he is eating what he's eating, you pinpoint out what he has created within that creation. Listen, you chop these beautiful onions or you cut these herbs and you make sure you give him a scissors to cut the herbs so he doesn't cut his finger. If he's going to be chopping the onion, make sure you do the majority of the cutting for him. But he's 11 years old. He's got a proper knife. Make sure it's a 6-inch maximum knife so he's not too big. But pinpoint out what he has created and give him that pat in the back that we all need. What a great job. This is fantastic. Without this basil that you put in there, this dish wouldn't taste like that. So give him an encouragement and make sure that you give him a specific task that he's responsible for.
And I would just add that I think one of the things that a lot of kids miss out on is really understanding how to choose food well, whether it's fruits or meats or fish or vegetables, and also where they come from and what's in season. So, you know, even if it's a little container garden on a balcony, you know, helping them really appreciate what it takes to have the good ingredients before you even get in the kitchen.
That is a great point, Judith, because if we do not make them understand where the food comes from, we're not going to be able to show them what proper mindful eating is. So it's great to take him shopping with you. Give him the chance to make choices and say, tonight, what do you want? Give him two choices, chicken or pork, and tell him about what the ingredient is, on and on and on. That is a great point, Judith.
And I think, too, especially, you know, we're so fortunate in many parts of Wisconsin to have farmers markets where we can actually meet the producers and ask them questions about what they're selling there. You know, that enthusiasm, that love for their product is really infectious, like you were saying earlier. You know, and I think for kids to be able to talk to the farmers or, you know, the people that are raising the meats and things like that, that's a whole nother level of connection, too.
That's true. That's absolutely true. And right now is like you have just led a child in a candy store. I'm like a kid in a candy store. I love farmers market. I love that one-on-one relationship with the vendors, what they have created, and they are just full of ideas. I walk down the aisles. I see the potatoes. I see the rhubarb. I see this. I see that. And just my mind explodes with things that I want to create.
I want to make sure people know that if they go to our Facebook page, that's the Larry Mueller Show, we have a link to a whole archive of Chef Fecker's recipes on the Il Mito site. And so people can go there and look at a bunch of your recipes and try them out. And there's a whole range. One of the things I want to make sure we get to in the last few minutes here is dessert, because, you know, dessert is just a wonderful part of a meal. Again, we often have this, you know, this torn feeling about, oh, I shouldn't, but I really want to. And, you know, and sometimes we say we'll have just a bite, and then many, many bites later, we're still enjoying it. What are some nice, healthy, light desserts, especially things that are, you know, using good seasonal ingredients that you enjoy making and that you enjoy eating?
Absolutely. I just want one thing to mention one thing. If all of our listeners take one thing away today, do not look at food as the guilty person that, or the guilty thing that is making your life miserable, is the way we manage it and the way we create it. So coming back to desserts, that's a great question. I love finishing a meal with a dessert because that's sweet tooth. But I love fruit-based desserts, something with a little bit of crunch at the end or implemented into it, such as right now, strawberry season is coming up.
Mm-hmm.
So strawberry, fragole alla balsamico, which is a classic Tuscan dessert. You know, I do strawberries, I toss them with a little bit of balsamic vinegar, a little bit of Wisconsin maple syrup, drizzle sprinkle a little bit of almonds on top, and serve it with a small little puff pastry cookie, and that's it. You got the crunch from the cookie, you have the moisture from the maple syrup and the balsamic, and you have that beautiful freshness from the strawberry. But make sure your plate is mainly strawberries, and you have a small cookie, not five cookies and two strawberries.
And I think, and not a half a cup of whipping cream on top either.
Okay, now stop teasing me, Judith.
Well, and there are other things too. I mean, you say fruit-based desserts, and people tend to think of, you know, kind of the usual like strawberry shortcake, which is delicious. But, you know, but there are other things like even grilling half peaches or something on the grill. You can really do a lot more with fruit than people often think of.
You know, if you look at one of my recipes, you know, I have my show on Saturday mornings, and what I did last weekend was grilled watermelon, mango, and pineapple salad with, again, Wisconsin honey and fresh mint.
Wow.
I mean, you, by grilling, what you're doing, you guys, I beg of all of you, all of our listeners right now, please try this. You grill, by grilling, you're evaporating the water, you're intensifying the natural sugars, you're creating this caramelized surface. Chop it up, put it in a bowl, and you see just going to start releasing juice as the pores of the ingredient is open. That's going to become the juice of your grilled watermelon salad. Some fresh mint, the heat of the watermelon and everything off the grill is going to open and the pores of the mint. The honey for sweetness is just beautiful. And a squeeze of lime, and that's it. Leave it alone, guys. Keep it simple. Keep it simple.
Well, and with that simple and delicious idea, we're going to have to close this segment. Chef Michael Fecker, thank you so much for joining us today. It was fun and informative and definitely a mouth-watering program. So thanks so much.
Love being here. Thank you for having me.
Thanks. Chef Michael Fecker is the owner and executive chef of Il Mito Enoteca in Wauwatosa, Wisconsin. And he was joining us by phone today. We're going to switch gears just a little bit. We're still going to talk about enjoying life to the fullest. We'll be right back with Rebecca Cohen, who is the author of 15 Minutes Outside, 365 Ways to Get Out of the House and Connect with Your Kids. Please stay tuned here on the Ideas Network.